is WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlantis Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future.
Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters here. It's Sunday morning, and we've arrived at August, and we're still living in the COVID economy, the COVID stock market, and we're going to talk about that today. And I think I did a presentation this week about where we stand, kind of a reset. This is I don't know, call this phase two, three of living with COVID-19 and the dramatic impact that it has on our economy and our health and our lives. We get second quarter GDP report this week, again, looking backwards, but it was the worst report we've seen since we began taking record. That was 1947 when we started keeping track of this, but likely worse than what we saw in the Depression, minus 32.9%, call it minus, I'm about 33%. Now, that's an annualized number. For the quarter itself, it was closer to 10%, but just this massive hole in the economy, blown into the side of the battleship that is the United States of America. Congress still trying to patch that hole with continued rounds of stimulus. So I think if I were to put a title on this or write an article that takes stock in where we are today and then where do we go from here, I would call it the good, the bad, and the prayer, which really comes back to unprecedented problems that we face here in this economy and this world that calls for unprecedented solutions. And that's also where we are as we see this massive act from our government, our federal government, and our monetary authorities at the Federal Reserve. Yes, we're in this back and forth. Are we going to get a deal? Mitch McConnell says, we'll probably get a deal in the next 2 to 3 weeks. We just heard on our news right here on WSB where we heard members of Congress saying, we're not that far apart, or we are. The latest talks were more productive. We're going to get some sort of deal. There's too much political pressure from both sides. And quite frankly, there's too much need for it, with nearly or over 17 million Americans still collecting unemployment insurance because we were, to some extent, forced to shut this economy down. Perhaps that shutdown, that lockdown of the economy in March and April and the majority of May in a lot of states in the United States, maybe or perhaps more unprecedented than the virus itself, the black swan we talked about at the beginning of the year, COVID-19, global pandemic, or was the black swan the shutting down of this economy? And that is even more unprecedented than the flu or the virus itself. So good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. Today, the good, the bad, and the prayer, unprecedented problems call for unprecedented solutions, and that's exactly what we're seeing. Also, what is the new shape of this U.S. economic recovery? There was so much talk early on, the V-shape recovery, the U-shape recovery, the square root look, the Nike swoosh. And I think I know what the shape really does look like, and I've drawn this out. I put it on Twitter to try to get a name for it because it is an odd shape of recovery. And it's in a latest post, and I'm searching for a name for this shape. And I know this is an audio. We're listening together here, and we don't have any visuals when it comes to this medium. But I think if you were to, I look at this shape as afar, if you think of the beginning of this year, the economy getting stronger and stronger, January, February, and then so just a slight uptick and then falls off a cliff. And that's the shutdown in March and April and May. And then the reopening in May and June, this dramatic jump higher. Retail sales, as we know, for the month of June, up over where we saw in 2019. May, huge jump. June, huge jump. So we had a V-shaped recovery, but the right arm of the V didn't get back to where we were. We know there's still a lot of turmoil problems. Businesses shut down, not at full capacity. And then we're kind of moving sideways. This is the line I'm describing. We're now in this phase where we're pretty much reopened, but this is a very different economy. The restaurants in most places in America can be open, but most consumers don't feel safe to be inside. So you've got a lot of these outdoor settings, which are wonderful adaptation of how we can do business and still go out to eat with our family and our friends outside. I call this the pavilion economy, underneath a pavilion with a fan, open air. That's where we feel safe now as Americans. But our economy for the last 100 years was not designed to do that. To some extent, that was a adaptation or addition, but now it is an essential part of how we go out to eat at restaurants, but it's still not back to full capacity. So as we live in this world from June and July and August, September, October, as we're waiting and we're waiting for the medical community to come in and save the day, and that's the prayer part of this. We are praying that one of these vaccines work, one of these therapeutics work, so that we can take the mortality rate of this just overly efficient, deadly virus that has wreaked havoc on the world, which is almost the perfectly designed weapon because it is so benign in so many cases, yet so dangerous in others. And we lost our friend here at WSB this week to this very virus, Herman Cain. We will, by the way, and I love Herman Cain so much, the day on Thursday coming in here to do the carathon, and talking with the young family and the young man, Ethan Post, who was 8 years old or is 8 years old. And this is an inspiring story because he is cancer free. I have a little 8 year old boy as well. I've got a bunch of them, but at the same age as Ethan, talking about that live on Skype with him was an honor here from the studio where I am right now. And then that same day, with the passing of Herman Cain from coronavirus, who was a magical, wonderful human that, as I think Scott Slade said this morning on Atlanta Morning News, Sunday edition, you left better, feeling better about the world and your life and a person after being with Herman. And I was fortunate to be, he was an early supporter, I think, of mine when I was early days of being here at WSB Radio. And then I was on his show many, many times. And just a wonderful, beaming human from ear to ear. And left you better off than you were before you saw him in any given day. And we're going to celebrate him and his life and his legacy here on WSB Radio tomorrow morning from 10 until noon. We also invite your open mics at WSB to talk about what Herman meant to you, and we'll play some of that tomorrow morning. So tune in for that from 10 until noon. As I would say very often, the great Herman Cain, as we remember his life. And good morning. Welcome to Money Matters here on a Sunday morning as we wade our way through and we drudge our way through this coronavirus and COVID-19 economy and stock market and world that we live in, and we are just waiting to get back to normal. And the prayer part of this, of course, is this, the medical community. It's not Congress. It's not the Federal Reserve. Who are we praying for? We're praying for these companies to come up with a solution, the private sector, with government money, by the way, and an all-in, all-hands-on effort to have some sort of therapeutic and some sort of vaccine that gets this economy back to normal. And as I talk about this shape of this line of economic recovery that maybe looks as though it's a praying mantis with its beak or nose in the beginning of the year with this dramatic drop and then a small V-shaped recovery, and then we're moving kind of sideways, so maybe slightly up, until we get to the next inflection point when that line gets back up higher and gets back to where we were in the economy of 2019 or early 2020. That's the shape of this. And to me, it almost looks like a praying mantis. And maybe that's fitting for the shape of this economic recovery. Perhaps it is a one-leg karate kid. Remember, I believe, Ralph Macchio standing on one leg at his final karate tournament. And with a hope and a prayer, wins from that position, arms up to the side, one leg, a final kick. Maybe it's the one-leg karate kid economic recovery. I don't know what it is, but if you can find a better word on that, let me know on Twitter. I posted the picture of this economic recovery. My Twitter, by the way, at WesMoss365, WESMOSS. 365 on Twitter, WesMoss365 on Twitter. So we're going to talk about that economic recovery. And we're going to go into, I want to talk, housing today is fascinating to me, what's happening in this country. There is so much change that we are going to live with now forever. And as you know, the analogy I've been using, and I've said this many times, I thought we were in for a marathon. Turns out that was wrong. Coronavirus is not a marathon. It's an Ironman triathlon. I think we're probably a little more than halfway through the swim, which is the middle part of the race. I think we are certainly on the back half of this. But there's still a long way to go. There's still a lot of bike left, and then there's a marathon ahead of that or after that. But what it's done, and because it is so long, and this is a one-year battle at least, not a three-month battle, because it is so long, the changes that we are undergoing in such rapid pace will be here to stay. And this is not a snap back to normal. If it was a one-month, three-month problem, we'd probably go pretty much back to where we were. Maybe with a little bit more Zoom and a little bit better at video conferencing. Yay. But this is a one-year plus problem, and we are developing those new habits forever. And one of those changes that will forever be ingrained in American economy, this American economy, is the meaning of our housing. Our housing now is also an office. And it's always kind of been that way, but if you look at the numbers, I did this analysis. If you go back to 2017, 2018, I think we had something like, we had 5.2 million people working from home. It's a lot of people that work from home, but I can tell you that it was relatively rare for a family to come into my office and say, oh, yeah, I work from home 80, 90% of the time. Pretty rare to hear that. 5 million people out of 150 million person labor force. Today, this is a study of the Chicago, Chicago University Booth School. The Booth School of Business, their MBA program, just released this a couple of weeks ago. 37%, almost 40% of this economy is a potential completely work from home economy. Almost 40% of the labor market. That's 50 plus million people, 55 million folks. So we're going to have gone from 5 million people working at home, counting that little area in the house as a home office as important, to 55 million. What does that do for housing forever? These are permanent changes, my friend. So good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. More money matters than the thought of, the good, the bad, than the prayer that we are living through COVID economy when Money Matters returns. Stay tuned. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here. It's Sunday morning. We've got some calls. I haven't even given out the number. Let's do that. 404-872-0750. Virtually producing, as I guess we call it, normal. Ryan Ely to help take your calls and your questions. 404-872-0750. Jay in Atlanta. Jay, good morning. What's up? How can I help?
Good morning, Wes. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
I'm 71 this year, and I'm retired, and I've got a 457 with about 76K in there. I was wondering, is there provisions where you could take out a one-time big amount to buy an automobile or a home or something like that? And if so, what might be the tax implications on it? And I have adjusted gross of 52K and a taxable income of 38K.
Well, a couple of things, Jay. Remember, once you get to the age, and remember, there 457 plans can actually be a little earlier than the 59. 59 and a half is the line in the sand. Age 59 and a half is when you can start to tap a 401k, a 403b, an IRA without having to pay a penalty. I think that's really what you're angling here. If some of the 457 plans can be 55, so it's even younger. For you, Jay, you're 71, man. So you're totally free of any of those provisions or restrictions. So you can take money without a penalty. I think what you're asking about is maybe even more about the taxes. And no matter what you take out, that's going to be taxed. And meaning that if you take out $10,000 to buy something, that it's going to add to that $52K that you talked about for your adjusted gross income. Now it's going to be add $10,000 to that. If you take out the whole thing, the whole $76,000, now you're going to have adjusted gross income of over $120,000, because it's just like getting a paycheck. And so again, this, it can, there's more nuances to that. So yes, this is something that you sit down and actually talk to a CPA about and get the exact numbers here. But just remember, when it comes to pulling money out, once you're past that 59 age, or in some cases 55, but let's say in most cases 59 and a half, you're good to go on the penalty side. The other thought here is, remember, because of the CARES Act, and this is for everybody else listening. So, Jay, you're fine. You're good to go. Just remember, every dollar you take out, it's going to increase your income. So just be mindful of that. But because of the CARES Act of 2020, which is the coronavirus relief and aid and relief that has now had multiple iterations, and we're working on another iteration of it right now with Congress, allows even more, pulling more out of these IRAs in this one given year, even if you're not 59 and a half, up to $100,000 in a lot of cases. And then they'll allow you to pay back the taxes on that over the course of 3 years. But because of the CARES Act, you've got this 1 year where you actually can reduce the, or not have to have that penalty because of this special, special, difficult year we're living through. You are listening to Money Matters. We're here to take your calls and your questions. Stay tuned. More Money Matters straight ahead. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here. It's Sunday morning. I'm your host, Wes Moss, here every Sunday morning from 9 until 11. And then you'll hear our updates throughout the week, market updates every day with Atlanta Morning News. And then really since the COVID economy started, I've been on with the Von Hessler Doctrine in the morning for a half an hour or so to give perspective on where we are headed with the virus, which is certainly controlling so much of this economy. So it's not only, of course, a health crisis, it's an economic crisis that we're in. Here's a tweet just this morning from Dr. Scott Gottlieb on the coronavirus. Clear sign that the epidemic in the Sun Belt is slowing. So that's obviously really good news. Some models, though, put the level of total infection in the South high, around 20%. Of Arizona and the Florida population. So when you get to that point, that's part of the reason you could actually, one of the big reasons you could see this, we're seeing a slowdown in infections, is because we are getting closer and closer to, now we're still a long way away from herd immunity, but once you get to that point, we've seen in other places the infection spread slow down. But what we also realize here is that the horse is out of the barn with COVID-19. There was some thought early in the shutdowns, which we're not going to debate that. We really can't. This argument is we should shut, we shouldn't shut. The answer is you can't. You cannot shut down again. We don't have the capacity to continue to print all money in the United States for everyone to live on from the federal government. It just can't happen. We've already, this quarter was the first time in history where the stimulus from the federal government was actually larger than the actual output for GDP. Now, think about that just for a sec, how shocking of a statistic that is. In economics, larger than the total output of what we did as a country in the second quarter. Now, it's not saying all that much because we were somewhat shut down. There was more stimulus money printed from the federal government and the Federal Reserve, then we had economic activity in the second quarter. Just never would you have thought that in America, which is free market, open capitalist society, that you would have that much government support in an economy. But there are no atheists in foxholes. And that's what we're seeing today. It's whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, there has been consensus that everybody needed some help, or the country in general needed help to get through this, as we all played our part in a shutdown world. But here we are now, and we've kind of, to some extent, we've opened up. We know that we're going to be kind of limping along here. We're like an F-22 Raptor fighter jet without all of our ammo. Still the best economy in the world, still will win any fight. But we are not operating at full capacity. We are not fully, fully weaponized as an economy. And we will not be until someone lassos the horse that is out of the barn. And that lasso or that cowboy is the medical community. It's biotech. It's healthcare. It is research. It is all the leading companies that are doing everything in their power to get us out of this. And it's really through medicine. It's through the medical community. Robert Sanders, our chief investment officer at my firm, just sent me this COVID-19 watch on where you can see. And there's so many different vaccines and therapies that develop. If you go to the Milken Institute, you look at fast cures. It's really, there's just so many of them. There's something like over 300 that they're tracking in a variety of stages. There's in the lab, then there's phase one, then phase two, and then there's phase three. And then there's the emergency authorization, which is the next phase. And then there's final approval. So think about over 300 different vaccines and therapies that have six different phases to go through. And just imagine tracking that with the billions and billions of dollars that are getting poured into this. And if you look at the leading candidates, you have, and these are companies that a lot of these I haven't even heard of, or you wouldn't even have heard of, because this is from around the world. There's Sinovac, that's a Chinese firm. And then there's Sinopharm, that is from Wuhan, China. And then there's Sinopharm from Beijing. And then there's, so the top three at least is farther along in these phases. Those are all in phase three for a vaccine. Those are all vaccines in phase three. And as a reminder, I'm not talking about the stocks or the companies here. So I'm not saying rush out and buy these companies because they're working on a vaccine. I am talking about the human healthcare part of somebody coming up with some sort of medicines, vaccine, therapy that saves our lives so that we can go back and feel comfortable about being outside and around other people and get back to a normal economy. And then you look at the AstraZeneca team, along with University of Oxford, which is in the UK. That team, by the way, AstraZeneca is the merger of a Swedish and a UK pharmaceutical companies, along with Oxford, the university, and that team is in phase three. Moderna is in phase three. Now, Moderna is an interesting company, and I, even though they're kind of out front here, I don't know. Moderna is this biotech company that really doesn't have any other products. So this is their, and they're a publicly traded company. And this is where the good, the bad, and the prayer comes in. The prayer is that this is something that works from a company that hasn't really had anything big yet. And they are supposedly leading the charge. So I raise an eyebrow with their trials, but they say that they're in phase three. We've seen very good news out of these trials, very encouraging. But then you have some big boys come here like Pfizer and BioNTech. So Pfizer and BioNTech, let's call them Pfizer, of course, extraordinarily established. We have Johnson & Johnson, and we have Merck. So we have some really big players in this as well, not just these smaller biotech companies that we are all rooting on. We're all cheering for one of these to work, multiple vaccines to work. Right now, there are 26 vaccines that are already, 26 in human trials. There are 139 in development, but there are over two dozen vaccines that are already being tested in humans. And I'm counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 that are already in phase three trials right now. And we are going to get some news, and we don't know which way it's going to go. But I'm telling you, it's already in August. And this is where the light at the end of the tunnel has gotten brighter. If you think about, you go back to February when we started talking about a vaccine. It's February. It's cold. It's dark. It's scary. It's an awful time as we're getting used to, just starting to wrap our arms around COVID-19. And then they're saying, well, there's no way to get a vaccine at minimum 18 months, bare minimum. So then you're thinking, oh, we got this entire year, and that takes us all the way into the next summer. And you think to yourself, there's just no light at the end of the tunnel. Now here we are, and it is August, and we are going to hear news out of some of these trials that started in July. We're going to get some definitive yes or no answers in September. It is August. That means next month, we're going to hear whether some of these are working or not, or are they safe and effective. And that gives me this encouragement. And we don't know if they're going to come out and say, hey, it worked really well, but 10% of people had serious complications from the vaccine, and that's going to be a no-go. And it's got to be safe. It's not just it can be effective. It's also got to be safe because we were talking about vaccinating billions of people. Then we're going to hear again in October from another one. Then we're going to hear in November from another one of these companies as they are this Operation Warp Speed to some extent is staggered from month to month to month. We are going to get answers from this. And that is the prayer that one of them is actually works and is safe to take. And meanwhile, during that period of time, we're so focused on vaccine, vaccine, vaccine. If we get a therapy that takes the mortality rate from now, we know that the mortality rate, once you're in the hospital, it was almost 5%. Now that is down to about 1% if you are going into the hospital for COVID-19. We want to take that down to zero, or I don't know if zero is ever possible, but down to 0.1%. And if that's the case, then we get back to a much more normal economy. And that could be done just through a therapy and not even a vaccine. I know that gets all the headlines. It's all vaccine, vaccine. But if we get a therapy that works, that is as good or even better than the one that is approved, which is remdesivir, and there are a variety of other treatments. And that's partially why the medical community has been able to bring down the mortality rate, because doctors and the medical community clearly have gotten better at treating this once we do get sick with COVID-19. So that is, we are in, I've been keeping track of just the top six companies, just the top six in funding from the U.S. government. So it's Pfizer's group, Novavax, J&J, Moderna, AstraZeneca, Emergent. Just if you look at that list of six, the U.S. government has pledged $6.7 billion, with a B, billion dollars to just those companies. That's a half a dozen companies and almost $7 billion. We are doing everything. It's effectively it's a blank check. It is a absolute blank check. You get this thing to work, it's a blank check for one of these companies. It's a tremendous revenue for arguably for decades. We don't know. And again, we don't even know how long this, if you have to get multiple vaccines, if you get some I've seen are just one, some are two shots, and then maybe next year and over again. We don't even know, but this is a tremendous amount of money thrown at a tremendous problem. Again, unprecedented problems require unprecedented solutions. And that's really where we are here today. GDP this week. We just found out the numbers. We knew what GDP was going to look like. The initial tally just fell shy of 33%. And that's an annual rate for the second quarter. We just got that news. How bad is that in relation to history? Well, if you go back before this past quarter, it's Q2 of 2020, the worst quarter since World War II was quarter one of 1958. That was about 60 years ago. It was a negative 10% annual rate. We just had a negative 33% annual rate. And by the way, that was also the year back in 1958 when we were hit by the Asian flu here in the United States. So if you listen to Money Matters, looking at GDP, looking at gross domestic product from the last quarter, it's almost like looking at your high school yearbook to game out what's next. Hey, honey, let's get out the high school yearbook to figure out what's happening next year. It really doesn't tell you much. It doesn't tell you anything about the future. But we look at it anyway because it's the mother of economic statistics. It describes the economic world we live in, and it's fascinating to see. Hey, how'd we do? It's like our report card. Oh, how'd we do? What took the biggest hit, by the way? So the usual suspects from the lockdown pain. So recreation down in the quarter, down almost 95%. Transportation down 85%. Hotels and food service down 80%. These are just wow statistics, things we've never seen anything like this. Ironically, it's fascinating to me that the health crisis that we're living through still, how hard the healthcare system got hit, down over 60% during the second quarter. And again, no elective surgeries, skipping anything that was non-essential for healthcare. Again, the tea leaves from a time capsule don't help. Looking at what happened last quarter might as well be ancient history, but it puts a stamp on what we already felt and already knew, what we just endured and we lived through. But this quarter, and this is the next iteration of this chapter, the third quarter of 2020, it may very well be one of the biggest snapbacks for the biggest economy of all time. We'll probably see a 15 to 20% positive GDP number as we're coming off this very, very low base. Doesn't mean we're back to where we were, but off a very low base. The good, the bad, and the prayer, unprecedented problems call for unprecedented solutions. And that's what we'll talk about here, continue to talk about here in the 10 o'clock hour. By the way, the number in the studio, 404-872-0750. Give us a call here in the studio. We're live. More Money Matters straight ahead. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here. We're live in the studio. I'm your host, Wes Moss, along with Ryan Ely, virtually producing. 404-872-0750 is the number in the studio. 800-WSB-TALK. 800-WSB-TALK. Mike from Milton. Mike, what's going on, man? How can I help?
Hey, good morning. Hey, I've sold my home, and I'm looking for a safe place to keep my equity for 6 to 12 months.
6 to 12. Well, what are you doing in the interim?
Renting.
And now give me a little bit more. Are you doing, is this a retirement sale? Is this just you're moving for work? Or I don't know if that happens anymore. Do people move for work anymore? Because everybody can work virtual.
Staying in the area, just probably downsizing.
Downsizing. Okay. I would tell you this. There's obviously a lot of ways to go with this. But I've actually done the same thing where I've sold a place and then just rented, so that gave me some time to really look. And this is a tough housing market because it is a really, really fast moving housing market. The housing numbers to me are amazing. One of the latest Case-Shiller Home Price Index, Mike, not that you called about the housing prices, but showed that think of it, and I'm gonna round these numbers a little bit, but nationally home prices grew about 4.5%. 4.5%, where if you looked at the city indexes, the 10 city and the 20 city are only about 3%, which tells me that there's a little bit of this suburban migration starting to happen again, where people are, and we certainly heard of the stories of people just saying, I'm done with New York City, and they're moving out. So, and I see this trend to some extent too, where folks are kind of moving a little bit away from the urban centers. And that's why you see housing numbers, prices climbing higher away from the big cities. And that is a fascinating trend to me. But I think it's also indicative of now our homes are our offices, and we really, truly can work anywhere. And this is not just for 5 billion people that used to be in the stay-at-home or work-from-home economy, but now we're talking about 55 million people. And But to answer your question about what do you do to park the money is, you and I, nobody knows where this market is going to be in 6 months, right? You could have a bunch of failed vaccine trials in September and October, November, and this market could get hit again pretty significantly. And so we don't know. It's really impossible to say in the next 6 months, put your money in equities, because they could be 20% higher. Because if all the trials come in and everything works, then maybe we see the rebound really continue. So it's just too cloudy. It's too foggy to know in the short run how the equity markets are going to do. So you've got to just keep the money safe. You've got to keep the money safe. And there's really not a huge advantage in taking on higher yielding fixed income. So definitely not on equities. That's my opinion. Even the fixed income market, if you want to get 4 or 5%, then you got to go into high yield credit, which that doesn't make sense right now either. So I would just be careful and just do the best high interest rate money market that you can find, which you can get over 1%, but you have to look. Stay tuned. More Money Matters in 11 o'clock or 10 o'clock hour straight ahead. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here. It's Sunday morning, the 10 o'clock hour, as we parse through. Just a continued, we're in the middle of the longest run, the Ironman triathlon that is the COVID economy, that is not a quarter, but a really a year, the better part of a year, maybe more than that, as we try to emerge and figure out where we go as an economy. So many problems to deal with here. We just got the second quarter GDP report, the largest we've seen since we've been keeping track in the 1940s for gross domestic product in the United States, down almost 33% on an annualized basis. Wow statistics economically when it comes to, we saw recreation down 95%, transportation down 85%, hotels and food service down almost 80%. In just unprecedented economic numbers. We're early on in investing. You're trained to never use the word unprecedented, because we've seen things like this in history, or history rhymes. Oh, and this is a terrible new problem, but it's a lot like this problem we had 50 years ago or 70 years ago or 30 years ago. And so no matter what happens or it is thrown at us, I continue to remember that. Well, it's not unprecedented because we had this happen. It's not unprecedented because we had this happen, but this is truly one of those times where you can use that. Not only did we have a global pandemic, or we're in the middle of one right now, and by the way, that's not unprecedented. We've lived through multiple pandemics on the globe, but then to shut down the economy and to have 2 months where we basically hunkered down, sheltered in place in our homes, restaurants were forced to close, restaurants, dry cleaners, nail salon, you name it, just, that is unprecedented. That has never happened before. And then, but we've also never had this much economic stimulus to try to patch the hole. Did a talk this week, again, a Zoom talk, which it's funny. I think I've done more presentations this year to audiences than I have in past years, because it's easier to schedule these things, right? It's, oh, well, to do a talk somewhere is a whole day for typically. Drive to this place, you give the talk, you're there for a couple hours, then you come back. It's a better part of a day. Now, a presentation to a group of any size, whether it's 2 people, 200 people, or 1,000 people, it is just the same thing. It's a Zoom. It's a video conference. Now, so I've done more of them. I still am so zoomed out and would love to get back into person, but that's not going to happen until we have some sort of vaccine. We talked about in the 10 o'clock hour. The analogy we've used for the last several months is that the horse is out of the barn, and the horse is going to keep going until the medical and biotech community lassos the horse and brings it under control. COVID-19 is not going anywhere right now. We are and the World Health Organization came out this week with, to me, actually makes probably the most sense. It's not that we're having second and third waves. We're just in one big wave. COVID-19 is just one big wave, and it's hitting different parts of the country at different times. We've seen some real improvement in places like Arizona. We've seen improvement in Florida, where the cases have become so widespread, estimated at 20% of the population, that it's actually, that in itself is slowing down the spread of COVID-19. But it's now popping up in the Midwest, is becoming much more of a hotspot. That's just what we're living with. And so we have this unprecedented bad, but then on the other side, we've done so much to combat this, which is the good. And then the prayer, and this is the talk that I've been doing on just kind of an update to where we are in the world as of August 2020 in an unprecedented world, is that we've got the good, the bad, and then the prayer. Unprecedented problems call for unprecedented solutions. And oh, by the way, we're less than 100 days from the election. Oh, the election. As big of a deal that is, it still plays second fiddle to the virus. So let's go through this today. And by the way, good morning. We're live here on this Sunday morning. We had a couple great calls in the first hour, and love to do the same here in this hour. So if you're listening to Money Matters and you're on your smart speaker or your car, driving around the city of Atlanta, headed to hopefully maybe go do something fun, play golf somewhere in the world, or maybe do some sort of church service, whether you're doing that virtually or doing with some people. We're here on this Sunday morning to take your calls and your questions to see if we can help in any sort of financial tiebreaker or just question that you've had on your mind. Maybe you're just stuck in your investment plan? Maybe you're nervous about the future. What do you do to protect yourself? Maybe you are optimistic, but still don't quite know how to implement because there's so many different ways to go. Maybe it's a real estate question or an investment question or a lending or mortgage question. Anything, all of the above is what we will talk through in hopefully the most objective way of any other place you can find on the air, not just here in Georgia, but in the nation. And that's Money Matters right here that you're tuned into. So the number in the studio, and we're live here this Sunday morning, the number in the studio, 404-872-0750. Again, 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK is the number in the studio. Again, I'm your host, Wes Moss, here every Sunday morning. And in addition to the talk that I've been doing this year, Happiest Quarantine Retiree on the Block, the one that we're talking about today here is the good, the bad, the prayer, the unprecedented problems that call for unprecedented solutions I'll talk through here today, and your phone call. So 404-872-0750 and 1-800-WSB-TALK. I'm here live in the studio, Ryan Ealy, virtually producing because we're living in this virtual world, and that's just the way it is, and it'll be that way for a while. So as we kind of talk this through, and I will get to the election here when it comes to this, the kind of the data that we're going to cover just right now, if you think about, I don't think there's any question anymore that when you have an open economy and people are going to congregate, we're going to see the spread of COVID-19. We went from something like 60,000 hospitalizations down to 20,000 hospitalizations, and then we're back up to about 60,000. So that is back up 180% from the low. And now, so that's the bad news. The good news is we've seen the mortality rate, even though we've had a huge increase in cases, a massive increase in cases and hospitalizations to some extent, we've seen the mortality rate go from 2,200 people per day in America losing a battle to COVID-19 down to about 1,000 a day. Still an enormous problem, but we're clearly seeing a better outcome for those who are going into the hospital. It was the case that 95 folks were going into the hospital and surviving. Today, that's more like 99 out of 100 folks are having to go to the hospital and surviving. So there, it's not all terrible, terrible news. But as far as the virus itself, the horse is out of the barn. The CDC has said that it's really every case we see, there's probably 10 times, 10x the amount of people that actually have had COVID and recovered from COVID. So that is just the world that we live in. So that is that's the bad. So this is the economy, the market, the sentiment, consumer confidence, all still all virus driven. And the residual impact of what has happened and the folks that are still unemployed in America. And then, of course, the election that causes this great uncertainty about the future. And that is also making investors really nervous. I can tell you I've got a lot of questions about, hey, election's coming up. I don't see what's going to happen. How can it be good? And we'll talk about that. And then you've got the unprecedented stimulus, which is let's call that if there is a good here, whether you want to call that good or not, at least it is an answer to this. It's at least it is medicine to kind of get us through this. It's patching the hole. But if you add that up, and that's so many different rounds of stimulus, whether they're fiscal or monetary. If you look at fiscal, what do I mean by fiscal? I mean the CARES Act, that was $2.2 trillion. They have the PPP loans, loans to the airlines. Put all that together and fiscal direct payments, enhanced unemployment, that's $2.5 trillion so far. And what Congress is debating right now is likely another $1.5 trillion. Estimates from $1 trillion to $1.5 trillion. So now we're looking at, you put those two together, and just on the fiscal side, you've got another $3.5 trillion to $4 trillion on that piece of the equation. Now, what about the monetary side? What about the Federal Reserve? Well, they've bought over $2 trillion worth of treasuries, $1 trillion worth of asset-backed securities. The term asset lending facility, the Main Street lending facility, which is $600 billion, that's $5.2 trillion. So put them together, And we've seen about $7.7 trillion in stimulus already. Probably going to over nine. We're going to call it, let's round it out to $10 trillion in economic stimulus to combat the negative impacts economically from COVID-19. Unprecedented problems, unprecedented response to those problems, and then solution. And then, of course, we come to the prayer. The prayer piece of this is that we are getting the light at the end of the tunnel, arguably or hopefully, prayerfully, is getting brighter and brighter. If you go back to January or February, if you look at February, talking about vaccines seemed like a forever away. 18 months at the minimum. It takes all the way in the middle of next summer. Now here we are in August, and we're going to get some results next month out of a company like a Moderna or an Oxford or AstraZeneca. We're going to get some results because we're already in phase 3 trials. Phase 3 trials of 10, 20, 30,000 folks, which is the kind of samples that you need to get through a phase 3 trial for a vaccine. We're going to know what those numbers are starting in a month from now. That's right around the corner. Now, we don't know if it's going to be green light or not, but we know we're going to start getting some answers. And then we're going to get more answers in October and more answers in November. So this is right around the corner. Unprecedented speed and unprecedented amount of money towards these companies for this unprecedented problem. By the way, good morning. You're listening to Money Matters. I'm your host, Wes Moss. We'll go to the phones here when we get back from a quick break, and then we'll continue to talk about the good, the bad, and the prayer. And then we still need to talk about the election, less than 100 days away. Stay tuned. More Money Matters straight ahead. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here at Sunday morning. The number in the studio, 404-872-0750 is the number here. 800-WSB-TALK. Lou joins us on the line. Lou, what's going on? How can we help?
Wes, thank you for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
Wes, I have a thrift savings program. I'm in my 60s. The amount I have in the thrift savings is $160,000. Wes, I didn't take my family out on vacation this year for obvious reasons. I just don't have the money. I need to put in a driveway into my property. The driveway is going to cost around $20,000. I don't know which way to go, either take out the thrift savings or take it out of the home equity line of credit.
Okay.
Which would be my less problem area with tornado taxes.
The tornado of taxes. You know, it's a couple of thoughts here. And this goes back to when you're saving for retirement, Lou, and anybody else listening, is that you've got really have there's three real buckets you can pull from a taxation perspective. You got your after-tax money that can be a little bit complicated, but probably your most sacred pile of money because you, let's call it after-tax money, because now you're looking at assets that you can pull from that might have a gain. So you have long-term capital gain that could be a favorable tax rate, or you can really be looking at return of principal, selling something or pulling money out of a bond that hasn't appreciated in price. So you're kind of just taking your principal, where if you're just taking principal and there's no gain on it, then you don't have any taxes to worry about. And that can be super efficient. And that's why I think of that bucket as almost your most, quote, sacred bucket of money. Of course, you're a Roth IRA or any sort of tax-free account. That is very sacred because you pull anything out of that, you should have no taxes on that. And then, of course, your TSPs of the world, 401k, 403b, thrift savings plan, IRA, anything that is retirement account, anything you pull out of that is taxed if it's not in an after-tax. So most of what you're going to pull out from that. And my thought here is that you've always got to look back at what your income is, Lou. So what is your income this year, or are you already retired?
I'm retired already.
Yeah, I think that if you need about how much?
20,000.
20? Yeah, I would say that to some extent, the home equity lines right now are cheaper than they've ever been. We'll cliffhanger this one. I want to give you an answer here. So hang on through the break. And we'll talk about what might be the best place to pull from for this new driveway. Not a very exciting way to be spending money right now, is it? New driveway. Ah, it's like getting a new roof. You don't even see it, but you need to do it. More Money Matters straight ahead. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here. It's Sunday morning. We're going back to the phones. 404-872-0750. Lou from Roswell. You've got to build a... It sounds like you need a new driveway, which is not an exciting way to spend money. But because of COVID, you haven't spent a whole lot this year. And you, to some extent, you haven't been able to take vacation. So maybe this is the time to do it. And your question really was about, where do you pull it from? Do you pull it from a retirement account and pay taxes and then take the after-tax money and do the driveway? Or do you do a home equity line of credit or some sort of home equity line of the house, which right now is extremely low rates? You're in your 60s. What, just approximate income this year, do you think?
50.
And are you a single filer or do you married filing jointly?
Married filing jointly.
So if you're at 50, and again, I'm looking at the tax brackets here. You're from about, and I'm rounding here. I'm rounding in the, from about 20 to about 80, you're still in the 12 bracket, 12% federal. Which means that if you go from 50 and you take out 20, now you're at 70, you're still really in that, looks to me, about the same tax bracket. So you're not going to push yourself into the next higher bracket. That's where I think things get tough when you're pulling a lot of money out of retirement accounts. You can go from the 12 to the 22. And then if you pull out even more, then you're going to 24, then 32, then 35, then 37. But for where, what you're talking about, that amount of money, you still, looks to me as though you stay beneath the 12% number. So it doesn't increase your overall taxes. Sure, you have to pay taxes on it from nominally. You got to pay tax on the money you pull out. But it doesn't increase your rate. So you stay away from that tax tornado that we talk about here. And again, I just, of course, the caveat, you've got to talk to a CPA and actually run the numbers. But to me, I think it is not the time. And this is where this is these are the financial tiebreakers. My research for you can retire sooner than you think. The five money secrets of the happiest retirees is that the retirees that are within 5 years of paying off their mortgage are four times more likely to be a happy retiree versus an unhappy retiree. Because when you get into your 60s, and if you can get out of that large debt, that is such a powerful economic position to be in. And it releases a lot of financial anxiety and pressure, and it leads to a happier retirement. So the last thing I want to see Lou do here is increase your debt when you're already retired and already in your 60s. I don't want to see you do that. I'd rather see you live without the debt because of all the other implications. So that's my call on this. That's my opinion. You obviously have to do your taxes with the CPA to get the exact numbers, but that's about where I would stand, Lou. And thank you, my friend, for your call. 404-872-0750. Mark joins us on the line from PTC, Peachtree City. What's going on, Mark? How can I help, man?
Good morning, Wes. Good morning. I have a question. I will be retiring probably in about 10 years or so. And I'm curious about your thoughts on those tiny houses. I see them advertised from time to time. Is that a good way to go when you're thinking about retiring? I went through a divorce, so I'm currently living in an apartment because I gave my house to, you know, my ex. So I'm kind of like starting over. So I'm just thinking, thoughts on that. Is that a viable way to go for a person when they retire to get a tiny house? Or I should be looking at something different.
You know, you've brought up a point that I've written about these tiny houses on my website a lot because I think they're a really cool option. So there are a bunch of articles at wesmoss.com about the tiny house movement because people love them. But you know, the other thought that, and I don't know if I've even written this or not, but the point you bring up, Mark, is this. Let's just say you're going into retirement and you still have a bigger house and a bigger mortgage and there's no way to just pay it off because it's too big of a mortgage. Let's say it's $200,000, $300,000 mortgage and you just can't viably pay it off quickly. Then you could, rather than using a tiny home as a second home or a vacation property, where I see a lot of folks do it this way, maybe and this is, you're kind of, you and I are brainstorming here. Maybe you just use the tiny home as your primary home, and you do it with no mortgage, because you can do one of these things for, I think the average price is something like $24,000, and you can get a viable tiny home. And that is actually very, very realistic. There are lots of other articles that'll show you that you could get a tiny home or do a tiny home for way less than that. You could do a $1,500. Now, I don't know if that is something you're going to be living in permanently, and I don't know the viability of that, but I can tell you that from the folks that I've talked to, you absolutely can do this for well under 20 grand and have a place that, and again, it all depends on the location. It depends on the property value, but a lot of these places are somewhere, they're somewhat a little bit more remote, so the property values are not high, and you can put together one of these tiny homes, and you can just eliminate your mortgage. So yeah, I think it's an awesome idea. Now, you've got to, it's hard for me personally to wrap my arms around it, but you and I are in a different situation. I have four little kids and two dogs, right? I've got a 13-year-old, a 10-year-old, an 8-year-old, and a 4-year-old, and they're always running around the house. And then I've got two animals running around, and a tiny house for me would put me in a tiny little mental facility is what would happen. So it's not viable for this stage of my life at all. But if you're looking at to be in your 60s and let's say go 10 years out, then it's an awesome idea, particularly for a downsized, a vacation place somewhere else to get away from, let's call it, the big city. And yeah, I think it absolutely is. So I think it's a really important movement. I think the movement is started a couple things. One, the fifth wheel has always been a big movement, where you've got a camper behind your car, your truck. The RV has, those RVs have exploded this year in popularity because people want to be on the road. It's a great way to travel and get out of town. And that's always to some extent been a way to do this. But if you think about RVs, now you're going back into the 50 grand range, 100 grand range, 250 grand range, right? So you get this moving vehicle that's like a first class airline. It's this giant tour bus, and it can be super expensive. So I think that, I've written about, and I go, this is the last call, we were talking about debt and not taking out any debt on a home equity line when you are in retirement, because that's a very powerful position to put yourself in. Mm-hmm. Well, the same thing comes with housing. So if you, rather than do the $100,000 or $150,000 RV, a spaceship on wheels, then a tiny house, it may be not economically exactly what you want to do, because it's not big, right? You got to live in this little confined space. But if you do it right, it could be, I think it's kind of like the best of both worlds. And maybe you don't want to be driving all around the country in an RV. Maybe the tiny house is a good solution. So economically, it's an absolute home run. No question about it. I don't know where you could find anything cheaper than that.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
do you know, like, whether or not we have, like, tiny house communities more so than, like, in the Fayette County area or anything of that nature? Or is this thing just starting to happen in Georgia?
Yeah, now there are listeners out there, and Ryan Ely is actually our producer here, does a lot of work with these, particularly for, there are companies that have started to pop up these tiny houses for little vacation getaways. So there are definitely places in Georgia where they might have 10, 20, 30 of these tiny houses. And Ryan's gone here. Now, Ryan's married, no little kids at this point, no animals running around. So for them, it's really easy to just pop away. And he's loved it. Really, really quiet. So there are definitely places in Atlanta, and they're more vacation-oriented. But they are communities of tiny houses. And I think that you'll see that continue to evolve. And I know there are definitely there are lots of communities across the country. I don't know of them yet in Georgia, but they're very well could be. We need to probably spend some more time on these tiny houses as a topic on Money Matters. But in the end, listen, if you have a Wi-Fi, right, that's part of the whole thing of if you're out in the woods, you're going to have some sort of, the developer itself has to be able to have good, let's say, have run cable internet out there, or some sort of satellite, so everybody gets good Wi-Fi. And then, as long as you've got some heat and maybe even one of those tiny air conditioners, which, by the way, are not a whole lot of money, then you've got AC, you've got running, right? You've got HVAC, you've got running water, and you've got Wi-Fi. And I don't know what else, and in the world that we live in, that brings the entire world to your tiny home for a tiny cost. And I think that that's going to be continue to be a smart way to do it in the future. Mark from Peachtree City, man, thank you for the call in and kind of getting that conversation up and running. That's fun. That's really cool to think about. Again, for me, with all my kids and everything, it's not an option. But I can see for our particular family in this stage of the game, doesn't mean it's not always an option. But for retirees that want to find a place and have no mortgage, maybe that's the answer. Maybe that's why tiny homes have become such an enormous movement. And I think it's going to continue to gain steam. Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. I want to go back to and finish up with the good, the bad, and the prayer. The good is you start with the bad, the problem, pressing problem is COVID-19. The good is all the stimulus and government support that has tried to help us at least patch this through. And the prayer, of course, is trying to find the candidates for vaccines that we've talked a lot about today on the show. Then we look at the economy or economic piece of the equation here. And we know that, listen, we still have the labor force is 152 million people working. Now we're at 138 million. We have the unemployment rates around 13%. So we have a terrible job situation still in the U.S. We've seen retail sales, which is a really important economic number that tells you where the consumer is. May was up 17%. June was up almost 8%. And year over year, June of 2020 was actually slightly higher than 2019. Well, a lot of that's because of the stimulus that has come in and aid from the government. When that goes away, that level of spending can't last. However, we're getting another stimulus package, likely, not for sure, over the next month or so. Restaurant data, really important data that really kind of tells you where this economy is. I think if I had to pick one real-time data point, restaurant data is really helpful. And we saw in aggregate, now there's different kinds of restaurants. Casual dining was just almost shut down for a couple months, down 80% at the Nader the last week of March. Fast food was down 30%. And now casual dining is down about 30%. And fast food is actually up in America. And that makes sense. And I will say one of the economically just well-oiled machine, I would compare this to Elon Musk landing a rocket ship backwards into Earth's orbit. It's almost this good. And that is the 100-person drive-thru at Chick-fil-A. It is so unbelievably well-run. And this is when we were driving back from Michigan. We found a Chick-fil-A off an exit somewhere. I think it was somewhere in maybe, I want to say it was near Louisville, Kentucky, somewhere. And I looked at the line. And I said, there's no way we're going here. It looks like there's 100 cars in this triple bay drive-through that was at the Chick-fil-A that came out of the parking lot and almost backed up to the highway. And I said, Lynn, there's no way we're doing this. It's going to take us an hour. She said, look, the kids are going crazy. We need to get some food. Let's go to Chick-fil-A. Took us about 7 minutes to get through this drive-through. In, wrap around, came through. They're walking and talking while you're in the drive-through. You know, every person is so polite and amazing. The order was perfect. And we got Chick-fil-A for the entire family. No wonder, by the way, the average ticket size for restaurants, fast food, is up a full 10% this time over last year. Because you're not just getting fast food for your kids. You're getting it for the whole family now here in America. Chick-fil-A just is a miracle of logistics in the fast food industry. When we come back, we're talking about the election, less than 100 days away. Stay tuned. More Money Matters straight ahead. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here. It's Sunday morning here until 11 o'clock to take, well, we've taken calls and questions, and it's time to talk a little bit about the election. Obviously, we have a lot of time left in order to do this. What's interesting here is that, and I've gotten calls for whether every single time we go through an election, if you're a Republican and you think a Democrat's going to win, you get freaked out and you want to sell out of the market. If you're a Democrat and you think a Republican's going to win, you're freaked out and you want to sell out of the market. So ironically, we've got I continue to get calls from both sides of the aisle that say, Wes, I think Biden's going to win. I need to sell out. And then, well, I think if Trump wins, we need to be selling out, right? The reality here is that we are so emotional about our own politics that we think that if our side loses, the economy goes from bad to worse. And the reality here is that elections happen every 4 years. And every single time, about half of the country is sad and somber with the outcome. And yeah, you could say, but this election, this one really, it's the same time every single time. Every single time there is enormous emotion and sadness on who loses and wins and elation when who loses and wins. And we still get through it as an economy. It's not that the candidates themselves are necessarily terrible for the economy. What hurts the market? It's the uncertainty that we don't know who's going to win. So the market doesn't like. It doesn't like uncertainty. So if you look at the combination of Republicans or in the White House and a Democratic Congress or a Democrat in the White House and a Republican Congress, most of those combinations, the economy and the market still does fine. And I know that there is probably more. This probably is the most heightened election that we can remember in our lifetimes because we're also doing this in the middle of COVID-19. So, of course, it's going to feel extraordinarily heavy and important. And it is. But no matter what the outcome, our economy will be okay. And the market will be okay over time. Remember, we're not investing for the next less than 100 days. We're investing for the next 20 years. And that is what we have to remember. But, of course, an important topic. We'll continue to look at how the Republican versus the Democratic baskets are doing, what that tells us about the election. And good morning and welcome to... Well, thank you for tuning in to Money Matters. You can find me and the Money Matters team throughout the week at WesMoss.com, WesMoss.com. Contact button in the upper right-hand corner. Those emails come straight to me. And Ryan Neely and the Money Matters team, we're happy to help get back to you throughout the week. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday. Tune in tomorrow from 10 to noon on a Herman Cain special as we remember a wonderfully powerful human right here from WSB. So many great years with Herman Cain. We will miss him so much. Stay tuned for the best program on the planet right here, 95.5 WSB, Atlanta's News and Talk.